I'm not too much of a singer. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. One, two, three strikes you out at the old ball game.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Hello and welcome to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn and Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. This week, we are talking with Bob Kendrick of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. We were going to talk, Jeff and I, about the the Royals' pretty poor road trip and a pretty disappointing series against the Nationals at home. But long story short, the Royals need to hit the ball better. And the 30 minutes that we were going to cover did not actually save. So we're just going to proceed directly into the interview with Bob Kendrick. It's going to pick up where he is talking about an event that is taking place on Friday, May 6th. It's called Jazz and Jackie. It is a celebration of Jackie Robinson's debut as a Kansas City Monarch, where he played briefly before being signed by the Brooklyn Dodgers and assigned to Montreal. So that's going to be taking place on May 6th. More information can be found on the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum website at nlbm.com. And without further ado, here is Bob Kendrick, myself, and Jeff Herr talking about the Negro Leagues, Buck O'Neill, and various other topics.
And as a matter of fact, that jersey that Chad Bozeman wore in the film hangs right now in the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. They presented me the jersey and the cap on the red carpet at that premiere. Another reason, if you haven't been down to see the museum, come down to see the Robinson jersey that was worn in that epic film, 42, by Chad Bozeman. It's a great tribute to, again, what Jackie Robinson meant to this city. And the film obviously was outstanding, and so. But there are other Jackie Robinson things here at the museum. And of course, Jackie is the beginning, but he's also the end. You know, he spelled the end of the Negro Leagues. You know, obviously, after he broke the color barrier, that opened the door for other African American and Hispanic ball players to enter into the major leagues, which ultimately killed the Negro Leagues. And so, it's a bittersweet story from that respect. But when we look at what Jackie Robinson meant to our society, in terms of the social advancement of this country, he truly is one of the most important figures in American history. And so we're very proud that the Negro Leagues gave this important individual to the rest of the world to celebrate. And so we will look at celebrating his career in the Negro Leagues, albeit with a short one. And again, his love of jazz.
Another event coming up is one of the fun ones, the Dress of the Nines. I mean, it's fun on its own. You know, you get a kind of have a retro day. You get to show up. It's a novelty. It's kind of different. It's a twist that nobody else does, but that it started from just grassroots and you guys at the museum and the Royals both grabbed it, took hold of it, and made it. You know, it's something that should be happening in Kansas City, and that's going to be the 15th of May against the Braves. And, you know, I can tell the story about where this kind of comes from, but you're much more eloquent than I am, and you're much better at this story than I am. So I want you to remind our listeners about the story behind Dress of the Nines, what it echoes in that golden era of the Negro Leagues, and, you know, more about the event.
Well, you know, every now and then, guys, an idea comes along and you wish it was yours. And I'd be lying if I said this event was mine, because it's not. It wasn't my idea. Brett Parker and Brad Belden approached me through Twitter about an idea that they had, saying it would be, do I think it would be pretty cool to get fans to come to the ballpark dressed up the way they used to go to Monarch games. And I, the minute he said it, I said to myself, damn, how come I didn't think of that? You know? I mean, because the idea was so good. And so the three of us, and then of course, Brad Belden and Sister Elizabeth joined in, and we started tweeting this out to see if we could get people to dress up to come to the ballpark. Well, we probably had, I don't know, 300-400 people who dressed up that first time out, and we all gathered in a single location there at the K. And people were looking like, what in the heck is going on? Well, the Royals saw the Twitter movement, and so they loved the idea so much that the next year they got on board and started promoting it as well. And all of a sudden, this thing had just taken off to the point that we're seeing thousands of people putting on their Sunday best to come out to the K to cheer for our Royals, who, again, we moved our Negro League salute game to Sunday so that it could really take on that authentic feel. And again, now the Royals are dressed up in the Monarch uniform. This year they'll be taking on the Atlanta Black Crackers, and it's dressed to the nines. Everybody going out to the ballpark looking good the way that it used to be. And I think what makes this idea so special is simplicity. You know, it's just a simple call to action. You know, you're going to the game anyway. So put on your Sunday best in a salute to the way that fans went to the game. So it creates a fan experience. And it's been a beautiful thing to see how this has resonated with baseball fans. And quite frankly, I think we have the coolest baseball promotion out there. When you look at the entirety of this salute to the Negro Leagues, the dress to the nines. Last year we did a Sunday jazz brunch as part of the celebration, and I'm working to see if we can pull that off again. And so it's just an amazing celebration, but to see people of all races, people of all ages out there in their Sunday best, basically tipping their cap to the Negro Leagues. I mean, it is just an amazing event. I marvel when I look at the ladies who all go vintage and they've got the gloves and the hats on, and, you know, you are harking back to those days of what it was like, you know. And the thing about this whole dress of the nines concept, it really does apply to the Negro Leagues, because during that era, most Negro League games were played on Sundays because Major League Baseball really didn't play on Sundays. So the Negro Leagues would get access to the stadiums. They would play their Sunday doubleheader. We left church. We left church going straight to the ballpark, dressed to the nines. And so to bring that style, that era, you know, that vintage look, and that way to celebrate the fan experience, I think it is absolutely unique to Kansas City. I hope that one day other major league cities will replicate what we're doing, because, again, it's just so simple to execute. You don't really have to do anything. It doesn't cost you anything but a ticket to the ball game, and you're going to the ball game anyway.
Yeah, I know a lot of I just interact with a lot of fans of other teams, and they're jealous of it. Like, they see it happening, and I know a couple of people who said, hey, I want to come out to Kansas City. I want to take part in this. You know, coming from, you know, all the way in California. And so I'm surprised it hasn't spread more. But at the same time, it's kind of nice to keep in Kansas City. But it is something where you spread the word of everything, the story behind it, the participation of it, the enjoyment of it. It, like you said, it's very simple. It's also a lot of fun. I mean, you've got even the groundskeepers are in on it, where they've got suspenders and they've got the caps and everything, and some of them wear mustaches, and it's all the same. You know, it feels like the kind of a throwback that you can't always recreate. It's a really simple one day thing that you can just kind of be back in the 40s and kind of feel like you're there and enjoying the history of everything, just even for one day.
Well, you know, the Royals have done a tremendous job of embracing this event. and turning it into a significant celebration. From the giveaway items, you know, first year was a Monarchs fedora, then it came back with the Newsboy cap. This year they've got a new style fedora that they're giving away to the first 10,000 fans in the ballpark. And as you mentioned, the field crew, you know, in vintage attire, the team wearing a vintage style batting helmet, and then the fact that they auction off the uniforms with all the proceeds coming back to benefit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. So excellent. I don't know if you could build a better promotion, quite frankly, you know, that engages the fan participation. The athletes are participating, you know, the grounds crew is participating. The Fox broadcast is done in black and white for an inning or so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you really create that entire feel. And so, like I said, I think it is the absolute coolest baseball promotion, bar none, you know. And so we're excited about it. We're looking forward to it. I think it's going to, you know, be another great celebration. And I hope that people will come out and support it. You know, again, if you're coming to the game, and just put on your Sunday best and come on out. Look good. Cheer on our Kansas City Monarchs and get us a win, because we need some wins.
And you know, I think an additional kind of aspect of it now is with the Royals' resurgence the last few years, you know, Dress to the Nines has kind of come along with that. And so you've got so many new kids, you know, in that, you know, 9, 10, 11 age range, who now the Royals are their, you know, their number one, and they've seen them win a World Series, and it's, you know, it's so huge right now. So then to have this kind of be a part of it as well with the Dress to the Nines, like, it's really great, because then you're still keeping that history, keeping the, you know, the awareness and the knowledge of the Negro League Museum and the history of the Negro Leagues and everything with it, which is just another kind of added aspect of, you know, just it makes sure that this new generation of Royals fans, you know, that stuff isn't forgotten. It's still kind of cherished as part of, as you said, kind of the soul of Kansas City.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that's what makes, you know, again, this so exciting. You know, you think about baseball, and no sport holds to its history the way baseball does. Mm-hmm. And so that romantic nature of our sport really lends itself to this kind of event. Because, again, you can go back and you can recreate, and people feel motivated to do so. And, again, that's why I get a kick out of all the ladies, because the ladies really both in. You know, you do. You go, you see them, and it's amazing to see with the gloves and the hats and, you know, that style. And so, you know, I think the ladies look for a reason to dress up anyway, and we've given them one and a very cool reason to dress up. But the men and the kids, even the kids, you know, they got on the little suits and they got the little fedoras on. And I know somewhere old Buck is smiling, because, again, fashion was a big part of that experience. You know, you never saw the players from the Monarchs dressed outside the ballpark and they not be suited up. You know, so it was a big part of that experience from the players' perspective, but also a big part of that experience from the fan perspective. And, of course, this was the era of dress, so you went dressed up pretty much everywhere you went. But the ballpark was no exception. And again, because oftentimes we were leaving church, it made that even, I think it brought it out to a whole nother level. And so these fans took great pride in dressing up to go watch their Kansas City Monarchs play. And, you know, it's been rewarding and heartwarming to see our fan base take great pride in doing that exact same thing. And so, man, this is a great event. I hope, again, that people will come out and participate. They got a special package right now, a special ticket package that includes a very cool Charlie Hustle T-shirt, a game ticket, $5 comes back to support the museum. So you can participate in this, support the museum at the same time. And so, you know, again, I tip my cap to the Royals for the work that they're doing to really support the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, to educate fans about the history of the Negro Leagues, and create an event that gets everybody engaged and involved.
You mentioned the timelessness and this sense of history. And that brings up, you know, the next really big one, and this is a really big event, the Hall of Game. You guys just announced the next four inductees, and the spirit of this is to take players from the modern era, the integrated era, and those players who would have fit perfectly in the Negro Leagues, embody the spirit and the style that kind of goes along with the kind of play that you would see at a Negro Leagues game. So four inductees, Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, those are guys that Jeff and I got the chance to see as we were growing up. But a couple, mm-hmm. Tony Oliva and Orlando Cepeda, they were before our time. But four great players, four definitely fitting candidates. How does the selection of these guys kind of come around? How do you narrow it down from so many great big league players to pick only four per year and not get tempted to try to put everybody in who fits the criteria?
Yeah, and it's not easy. It's not easy because for the reason that you just talked about. There are so many dynamic players who have played the game. And you may note that every player that we induct into our Hall of Game is not necessarily in the National Baseball Hall of Fame, because the criteria, and really the main and lone criteria, is that you played the game, you were a great player, but you played the game in that style and spirit of the Negro Leagues, that signature style. You know, so you played it with passion, you played it with determination, you played it with a high level of skill, but you also played it with a little swag. You played it with a little So you had to have that if you were playing in the Negro Leagues. And so the players that we've picked to be inducted into our Hall of Game over the last 2 years, this is our third class. You go back to year one of this great event, Joe Morgan, Dave Winfield, Lou Brock, and then posthumously, the late, great Roberto Clemente and his son, Roberto Clemente Jr., came to represent his father and his family. Dynamic inaugural class. We come back in year two, and there's Ricky Henderson, Ozzy Smith, Fergie Jenkins, and my main man, Louis Pion, El Tiante. You know, I told Louis when he was here last year to be inducted, I said, you know how many kids you got hit because we were all trying to mimic that turn the back, you know, to the batter and throw. And a lot of kids got hit as a result of, but El Tiante had that style, that flair. Another guy who should be, in my humble opinion, in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. But he was also a legacy choice for us as his father played in the Negro Leagues, Louis Pion Sr. So now you fast forward to this year, and everybody was wondering, okay, well, how are you going to top last year? And I'm saying to myself, I'm not sure how we're going to top last year. But as you mentioned, we come back with Orlando Cepeda, Tony Oliva, the Hulk, Andre Dawson, and the Rock, Tim Raines. You know, and when you talk about Tony Oliva and Tim Raines, again, you're talking about two guys who, again, in my own humble opinion, should absolutely be in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And I think both will get in. I think Tim Raines will absolutely get in next year, but I'm glad we got him first. And I think Tony Oliva will probably get in as well, and I hope he does, because Tony deserves to be there. You don't see too many lifetime 300 hitters not in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And then Orlando Cepeda, whose father played with and against Negro League players in his native Puerto Rico. And then Andre Dawson. I mean, you know, consummate 5-2 guy. You know, the great arm. You see guys running on the Hulk, man. You know, and so we think we put together another great class of honorees. And what really excites me is that when I call these guys to let them know what we wanted to do, they were just as excited to get my call as I was for them to accept the invitation to come and do this, because they hold the Negro Leagues in high regard. And so you're right. It's a difficult process trying to narrow down. And one of the other criteria that I did fail to mention is that you have to agree to come. So unless you are a posthumous selection, you do have to agree to come. So every now and then we'll run into a guy who has a conflict in schedule. And so we say, okay, we'll come back to you in a subsequent year. But it's so important that the people that you honor are there to be a part of this. And we really, you know, maybe with the exception of maybe a couple of occasions, we've run into schedule conflicts, but everybody has wanted to be in Kansas City, to be celebrated by the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and feel very honored to draw that comparison to how they played the game in the Negro Leagues, which by and large was a far more exciting brand of baseball than Major League Baseball was at that time. You have to keep in mind that Jackie took over with him to the Major Leagues, that signature Negro League style, very fast, aggressive, daring. They were stealing bases. You know, they bought their way on, steal second and steal third. And as old Buck would say, if you weren't too smart, they'd steal home. And the guys were diving in the hole and flipping the ball behind the back to start the double play, which you see every night now on SportsCenter as a SportsCenter top 10 highlight. Well, the major leaguers would accuse those players of being showboats. So they're showboating. And the late, great Buck O'Neill summed it up very beautifully. Is only showboating when you can't do it.
And that's so much of a discussion now where you got guys like Bryce Harper who are playing with, you know, such enthusiasm out there. And then there's a group of fans and even older players who just, you know, they don't want, you know, they don't necessarily subscribe to the same kind of idea, but it's a passion. It's a game of, you know, energy and, you know, sudden excitement. You have the lull between pitches, but that's where the base runner's scoping out the pitcher. And that's where Lou Brock and Ricky Henderson and Cool Papa Bell are picking out when they're going to go. And everybody knows they're going to go, and they steal it anyway.
And they steal a base anyway.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's the thing. And I share, you know, we had Bryce here this week at the Negro Leagues Museum when the Nationals were in town, and I got the opportunity to present him with both the Josh Gibson Award for leading the National League in home runs and the Oscar Charleston Award, which is our MVP honor for being named the MVP of the National League by the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And so, and I told him as we were giving the tour, and Dusty Baker and Gio Gonzalez and a host of other guys who came in from the Nationals, and I was telling Bryce as we were doing the tour, you would have fit in the Negro Leagues. Absolutely. You know, he got that swagger. He can play. You know, he's obviously one of the best young stars in Major League Baseball, and he too was humbled by this experience. He's a history buff. And I think if you're going to play this game, you should know baseball history. Because, again, no sport holds to that history like our sport does. And so as he walked through and he was listening to me tell the stories, and you could see that there was this level of enjoyment, but also a level of respect that came with this knowledge that he was receiving. And so the minute he left here, the first thing he did was post on his Instagram account the fact that he had had such a great experience at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. I hope that message will resonate with other young players when they come into Kansas City, that they will want to come here and gain this experience as well. And for Bryce Harper to be even remotely compared to the great Oscar Charleston is one of the highest compliments that you can get, because Oscar Charleston was one of the greatest baseball players this sport has ever seen. Many believe that he was the greatest all-around baseball player. As old Buck would say, he was Willie Mays before we ever knew who Willie Mays was. The consummate 5-2 guy, hit for power, hit for average, could field, could run, could throw. In 1921, Oscar Charleston led the Negro Leagues in home runs, triples, doubles, stolen bases, and batting average in the same season. If you were going to compare him to a major league contemporary, he had the defensive prowess of Tris Speaker, the tenacity of Ty Cobb, and the bat of Babe Ruth rolled into one dynamic package. Buck said he never saw a center fielder guys who could go back on a ball the way Charleston could. Uncanny instincts. Crack of the bat. The old timers in Negro League say the play that Willie Mays made in the Polo Grounds, the running over the shoulder catch.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So had that been Oscar Charleston, he'd have been standing there waiting for it to come down.
That's awesome. And, you know, I'm glad we brought up the Bryce Harper thing. It's something we wanted to talk about. And it's so great to see, because it's one of those moments where, we've talked about it on the show, just how amazing of a player Bryce Harper is. And to see him when he tweeted that out, and I saw that and I retweeted it, and I was just, it's one of those moments where, you know, especially since the Royals were playing the Nationals, you're always kind of just like, oh, you know, it's the other team. Don't want to, you know, be too nice to him or whatever. But it's one of those moments where you're just like, damn, that's really cool that, you know, he took the time and he went in and then he tweeted about it and sent it out on Instagram to really kind of to keep it up. So, and it's, I mean, it really, you know, cause there was that interview that came out before the season, in Sports Illustrated where Bryce Harper, you know, was quoted talking about what you've kind of mentioned, that swagger, you know, that he has, that was a big tenet of the Negro Leagues at the time, and how he likes to have, you know, fun in baseball. And there's a lot of this kind of old guard, if you will, that the same type of mentality that would kind of turn their nose up at that, you know, what they called showboating, like you said. And so it caused a lot of waves to see him say that, but it's really great to see, you know, okay, he says stuff that a lot of this old guard may not agree with, but then he still appreciates history. So it's not as though he's someone who is trying to, you know, just say, oh, forget all of baseball history, I'm doing my own thing. He's appreciating it well. So that's something that's really great to hear when you talk about his visit.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. You know, when you're a young athlete, and particularly a young Major League Baseball player, you come to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, the thing that I oftentimes share with my young athletes is the fact that the one common denominator that they share with these men who played in the Negro Leagues is that they have a love of the game. And you will never see a greater love of the game than you do when you visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Mm-hmm. They had to love it in order to endure the things that they had to endure just to play baseball in this country, but they would never allow the social adversity to kill their love of this game. So if I have to sleep on the bus and eat my peanut butter and crackers, I'm going to keep playing ball. And as a baseball player, as an athlete in general, but particularly as a baseball player, you have to appreciate that deep-rooted passion and commitment for this game, and then to overcome those obstacles and be great at it. So every baseball player can relate to that, because they play a game that they would have played for free, even though they make a great living doing it to now they all love the game, and they're playing a game that they played when they were a child, and now they're fortunate enough to make their living playing this game. And so they can relate to that, and I hope that when they come here, it also helps them put things in perspective relative to how great life it really is for them, because mm-hmm. they don't have to deal with things that these players from Negro Leagues had to deal with. And so when they start to think that things ain't going well for them, I think they can draw some inspiration for what they experience here. Ryan Howard used to come here every year before he went down to spring training. And I think it was almost like his rites of passage. He would mm-hmm. come here, he would absorb this experience, and then I think he felt like, man, when I go to spring training, there's nothing that's going to happen to me that even remotely comes close to what these men had to deal with. And so if they can deal with it, then certainly I can deal with what I'm having to go through, whether it's a slump, you know, whether it's an injury, whatever it might be. You know, I think it provides that wherewithal to kind of look back and reflect and say, okay, this is nothing compared to what these men had to do. And I do think it sets that perspective for our young athletes when they do come and visit.
When these players come to visit, is there any particular exhibit or any point in the story of the Negro Leagues that maybe they're surprised to learn about that they didn't expect? About how many know the story of Jackie Robinson but not necessarily the story before Jackie Robinson?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, because I think baseball has done such a wonderful job of helping the guys understand what Robinson represents in our sport and in our country, so they at least have a baseline understanding of Jackie Robinson. Many of them, like many folks here, did not know he started his career in the Negro Leagues. But I do think when they come back, because you have to remember, these kids, man, these are 22, 23, 24 year old kids for the most part. And thankfully, they've been removed from those kinds of social struggles that is very difficult for them to even fathom an America that was segregated. It's difficult for them to understand that. You know, segregation through the eyes of a child when they visit the Negro Leagues Museum is summed up very simply. That was dumb. And they're right. It was dumb.
It was.
But it was the way that our country was. And so when they come here, what we've attempted to do at the Negro Leagues Museum is take complex subject matters, segregation, difficult for us as adults to understand, no less our children, and try to simplify it by telling it through the eyes of black baseball players. And so now it kind of makes it even more ludicrous than we already knew it was. But it helps them understand how our country was, but also how our country has evolved. Even though we still have work to do in this country as it relates to race relations, our country has taken great strides. And so, but it also allows us as an institution to empower our young people to take us where we still yet need to go in the future. And so that is why I think this experience is so important. I wish every baseball player could take on this experience, you know, because again, because of that perspective, what it gives you is that perspective and an appreciation for just how far things have come and how good you have it, particularly as a major leaguer playing this game today. And that's our quest. You know, we love the fact that when I get young baseball players in here and see their reaction, not only to what the times were like, but how good these guys were. You know, when they hear these stories, they light up because, again, they know how tough this sport is. And then you have the challenges of the social adversity to deal with and still be great playing this game. So that is something that they hold, I think, in high regard. And again, it just always is welcome when we have, you know, current major leaguers visit the museum.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about, you know, kids knowing the game and the passion and the history, and then when you were talking about how people in the Negro Leagues at the time had to have a deep love for the game to deal, you know, to go through all the adversity and still play, you know, I think that kind of brings us into the final point we'll talk about before we let you go, but we wanted to hit on the Urban Youth Academy that is now underway. In process, and I understand you got some donations from some pretty well-known local baseball stars. Kind of talk about that and what the goal is with the Urban Youth Academy moving forward, and who all's involved in that process.
Well, we couldn't be more excited about the fact that we're building Major League Baseball's 7th Urban Youth Academy in Kansas City. Number 8 has been announced for Dallas, but what I'm excited about, guys, is that our Urban Youth Baseball Academy will be the only one that essentially has a Negro Leagues Baseball Museum attached to it. So you can imagine the excitement that we have with the realization that there will be thousands of young kids learning, growing, being nurtured in the game of baseball with the opportunity for us to basically expose them to the heritage of this game. So now they can walk into this museum and, by and large, see people who look just like them, who played the game as well as anyone played the game, but not only played the game, they owned teams, they managed teams, they were coaches, they were traveling secretaries, they were team physicians. They fulfill every aspect of the business of baseball that could be done. And so I don't only want them dreaming of playing in the major leagues, but I want them dreaming of owning a team. I want them dreaming to learn how to take care of a field or learn to be, you know, put themselves in a position where they could become a professional umpire. All these things that are associated with our sport, alongside the life learnings, the life lessons that come with baseball. You guys know baseball is a tough sport, even though anybody can play it. But it's a difficult sport when you fail more times than you succeed. And it is the only major sport where you're on offense and you don't have the ball. So that makes it a tough sport to play. And so you grow, you learn a lot about yourself playing this game because of the fact that it is by nature a game of failure. And so if you get 3 hits out of 10 trips at the plate, man, you are a budding Hall of Famer, you know, 300. So that means you taking that trip back to the dugout 7 times having failed. And so that is something that, again, you learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about teamwork and cooperation, playing sports in general, but particularly our sport. And so to build this wonderful academy, a $14 million project right behind the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, it will feature 4 fields, 2 regulation-size baseball diamonds, a youth baseball diamond, and a softball diamond, and eventually a indoor training facility. We couldn't be more excited. It's going to create job opportunities. It's going to drive a lot more traffic here to the historic 18th and Vine District. We foresee other business opportunities spawning as a result of this academy. And then, of course, the impact that it's going to have on the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. As, again, thousands of kids playing baseball with the opportunity to visit the Negro Leagues Museum, their parents, you know, tournaments and leagues and clinics and camps and so forth. again, with the opportunity for these folks to come and visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. So certainly from a self-serving proposition, it is going to have, I think, tremendous benefit for the museum, tremendous benefit for the historic 18th and Vine Jazz District, as well as, you know, meet that mission of providing kids an opportunity to play this sport. You know, we don't want economics to keep kids away from playing this game. And so if we can get rid of that barrier, then we can maybe develop the next Frank White, you know, who came out of the Ewing Kauffman Academy or UL Washington or Ron Washington, the three major leaguers who came out of Mr. K's Academy years ago. It's the same model, but the kids are a little bit younger going into this academy, and they get an opportunity to really grow into this sport. And so, again, it's not solely to develop a major league player, but if we do, man, that's icing on the cake. You know what I mean? And so we're really excited about this project. Again, I got to tip my cap again to the Royals, but in particular Dayton Moore, who is the visionary behind this, who wanted this project to be here connected to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. They could have built this academy anywhere in the city, and it would have been a success. But they chose to do this in Parade Park, right behind the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier.
Before we let you go, I want to – I've always been curious. I don't know if I know this yet. What is your favorite story from the Negro Leagues, your favorite story from a player, something that Buck told you, something you heard from someone else? Which one do you think the most fondly of?
And there are so many. Really are. And, you know, but I think I always delight in telling Satchel Paige stories. And of course, Buck, we could have done the entire show just telling Satchel Paige stories.
That's
Satchel Paige. And so one of my favorite stories of many is a Satchel Paige story that Buck told so beautifully about the Satchel Paige All-Stars, where Buck was playing first base for the Satchel Paige All-Stars. They're playing in the Denver Post Tournament. And so Satchel and the Satchel Paige All-Stars are playing an all-white semi-pro team from the Coors Brewing Company. And Buck says Satchel's on the mound, and the first kid up from the Coors dugout guys gets in the batter's box, digs in, and he says, Satchel throws him a fastball. Kid swung as hard as he could, topped it, dribbled it down the third base line. It stays fair. He gets an infield hit. Well, Buck says about that time, one of the kids from the Coors dugout steps out on top of the dugout steps, and he yells out, "Let's beat him. He ain't nothing but an overrated donkey." Well, Satchel's nickname, famously for Buck, as you guys well know, was Nancy, which is a whole other story. We ain't got time to tell that story. So Satchel looks over at first base, and he says, "Nancy, did you hear that?" Buck says, "Yes, Satchel, I heard him." He said, "Nancy, bring him in." So Buck is playing first base. He turns, he motions for the outfield to take a couple of steps in. And Satchel looks over at first base, and he says, "Nancy, bring them all the way in." Honest to God's truth. Seven guys kneeling around the mound. Satchel Paige and the catcher. And Satchel strikes out the side on 9 straight pitches.
Wow.
He looks into the Coors dugout, and he says, "Overrated darkie, hey." And, of course, by now, the kid that said this was embarrassed. He was crying. They all came out to apologize to Satchel and his teammates. But Buck swore to the day he died that if he had one game to win and any choice of any pitcher from any era, it would be the legendary Leroy Satchel Paige. He said, "You might beat him when he was out there messing around, but when he was locked and loaded, forget about it."
It's quite – I remember one time – I can't remember what it was that spurred me to do it, but I was just looking up Satchel Paige stuff on like Wikipedia, and some of the stuff that he did in some of the Negro League playoffs was just astounding. I mean, just pitching like 3 games in a row and pitching the entire games. I mean, it's insane the type of athlete that he must have been to be able to do what he did and pitch as long as he did. I mean, it just to see him in his prime would have just been something amazingly special.
Well, you know, and I think you touched on something that a lot of people kind of take for granted, the kind of athlete that he was. because he was so charismatic. He was so much the showman that you lose sight that you can't have that kind of longevity and you're pitching two and three times a, you know, in a week. You know, he's pitching two or three innings almost every single day and not be a great athlete. You know, he had one short bout with arm troubles in the late 30s. And then after that, the man pitched likely until he was 70 years old, you know, because we don't know how old he was.
Right.
So, you know, you don't do that without having been a great athlete. Your legs still have to be strong and to go with the mechanics that he had. And I think he was just blessed. He was blessed with some God-given ability, but he honed those skills. And I tell people all the time, you know, Paige, man, they clocked his fastball at 105 miles per hour. But what really made him so special, and as you guys well know, 105 is pretty doggone special. But what really made him so special was the pinpoint control. He could put it exactly where he wanted to put it. And even as an old man, he never lost his ability not to just throw strikes, but the catcher set the target, he hit the target. And so when Charlie Finley brings him back at age reportedly 59 in 1965, he pitches three shutout innings against the Boston Red Sox, giving up only one hit in those three innings. Of course, the Hall of Famer, Carl Yastrzemski. Yaz gets a double against the old man. Satchel leaves him at third, shut down everybody else over the next three innings in one of the most amazing pitching feats of all time. What makes it even funnier is the fact that Satchel had faced Yaz's father 2 decades before he faced before he faced Yaz. And Rico Petrocelli, who was on that 65 Red Sox team, I was doing an interview. He works for Sirius Baseball, the Sirius Baseball Network. And so I was doing an interview with Rico, and he told me, Bob, we all went to the plate hacking away at the old man. They thought they were going to light this old dude up. And he says, at that time, Paige's fastball was still 86, 87 miles per hour, and he was putting it exactly where he wanted to at age 59, which means he could have quite possibly been 69 years old or more at that time. He says they were all in awe as they turned and walked back to the plate looking at how the world is this old man doing this, you know. And so he was just amazing. He was amazing because he had the complete package. And I tell people all the time, you'll hear guys say, well, you know, Smokey Joe Williams or Hilton Smith or all these other great pitchers from the Negro Leagues, Bullet Rogan, Leon Day, they were just as good as Satchel, you know, or they threw just as hard as Satchel. But when you become the standard in which other people compare to, you must be great.
Right.
You must be great. And that's what Satchel was, because not only did Satchel have, you know, the stuff, but he also had the moxie. He had the charisma. He had that total package. See, he could sell it. And to me, that's what separates Satchel Paige from anybody else. You know, and so, yeah, he was special. There's no question about that.
I think it was last September at the Sung Woo event that was held for the premiere of the 30 for 30. I ran into you. We were talking. It was Chris Candler and I were talking about a Kansas City Mount Rushmore. And we asked you your opinion, and we were like, okay, you put George Brett on there, obviously. Len Dawson, sure. Tom Watson. And then I think Chris and I both thought Buck O'Neill, and you kind of thought that too. We both brought up Satchel Paige, and then I don't remember which one of us said it, but it was like, okay, if you're going to have a Mount Rushmore, Satchel Paige is going to have his own mount.
He's got his own mount, man. Satchel ain't sharing the mount with nobody else. But, you know, and I think we all lean toward Buck only because Buck became his iconic figure. Satchel had been dead for so long. And so people are still believe they're not learning about the legendary Satchel Paige. He died in 1982. But Buck was still fresh in the minds of people. And he became this iconic figure, particularly here in Kansas City, for the work that he did in building this museum and telling people about Satchel Paige and the other heroes from the Negro Leagues. And so I do think when we look at those pillars, sports pillars here in Kansas City, it would be Buck O'Neill because of all that he gave to the game and gave of himself so tirelessly But, you know, again, you know, I think Satchel has his own mountain, you know, Mount Page or whatever we might call it, you know.
Yeah, and I think probably no better way to leave it than with talking about a topic like that. So you've been incredibly more generous with your time than you absolutely needed to be, Bob. So it's always such a pleasure to have you on. Just kind of a reminder, all the things that we talked about.
Absolutely.
We got Jazz and Jackie this weekend, and then we've got the Dress of the Nines event on May 15th, and then the Hall of Game coming up next month in June. So and you know, the Urban Youth Academy is up and moving, and that's going to be around soon. So lots of great stuff. I know you're very busy, so thank you so much for your time, Bob, and it's always such a pleasure to have you on.
Bro, guys, I appreciate the opportunity. I encourage those who will be listening to the show, you know, come out and support these events. We need to see you here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum supporting these events so that we can continue to bring these events, hopefully in a way that will enlighten people, entertain them at the same time. And so, you know, I hope to see some folks come out to Jazz and Jackie and help us celebrate the 71st anniversary of Jackie's first game as a member of the Kansas City Monarchs. And then we'll see you all dressed up looking pretty out at the ballpark on Sunday, May 15th. And then on June 11th, join us at the Gym Theater for the third class of our Hall of Game induction ceremonies. Tickets are on sale right now for all these things. You can get more information at NLBM.com. And, of course, follow me on Twitter at NLBMPrez, P-R-E-Z.
Absolutely. I was going to mention that as we sent you off. So that's a great wrap-up. And, again, thanks. Thank you so much, Bob. You were more than generous with your time. Always a pleasure.
As always, every time, it's always a joy to have you on and share those stories and never get tired of them.
Well, man, I appreciate you guys thinking about me, and I appreciate the support.
Once again, we do want to thank Bob Kendrick from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum for joining us this week on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you get a chance and you're down in that area, go check out the museum. It's an inexpensive visit. It's a lot of good baseball history. It's very interesting stuff. You won't be disappointed. There's great videos, exhibits, clippings, uniforms. It's a very cool experience. So hop on down there, check out some of the events. Jazz and Jackie on May 6th, Dressed in the Nines on May 15th, and then on June 11th, it's the Hall of Game induction. Plus, you know, there's always new events all the time. So check out the museum, check out their site, follow Bob on Twitter. He loves to interact with fans. If you ever have any questions, he is more than happy to answer them. He is just the man. So we're going to be back next week with some more discussion about baseball and about the Royals. Hopefully by next week, the Royals will have won a few games and they will be hitting once again. But we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. We want to thank you, as always, for listening to us here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault and for checking out Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. There is new stuff every day at BPKC. So check it out. Check out the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And until next week, and as always, go Royals. Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. It's springtime, which means two things: Royals baseball and the Westport Block Party. The 5th annual Westport Block Party is once again hosted by McCoy's and our friends at Kelly's Westport Inn. The Westport Block Party is May 29th, starting at 8 p.m., rain or shine, and tickets are just $10. And your ticket gets you access to a fun annual tradition of dancing in the streets and the best beers in town. And this year, your ticket gets you one drink on the house. and you even get to take home a souvenir event koozie. Come on out and hear Twice on Sunday as they mix the songs you love and have a drink on Kelly's. That is the Westport Block Party, May 29th, starting at 8 p.m. Follow Kelly's at Kelly's Bar KC on Twitter or visit kellyswestportinn.com for ticket details.